and a Bewold by Winifred Holtby, adapted by Gay Houston.
December 1912. Mary receives the last comers to the family gathering.
Get that front door shut, John. It's perishing.
Well, let Tom in first.
Do you have anyone to see to the horse yet?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh. Well, welcome, Sarah. Tom, welcome.
Oh, quite a party.
We'll come straight in.
Well, I'll take Sarah up to our room first, Josh.
Tom, for goodness sake, use your handkerchief. There's a drop on the end of your nose.
Well, it goes with dreary night in December.
I'll take Mr. Tom's coat, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Well, John, I suppose we must congratulate you.
Yeah.
I still think it's a pity you left Littledale and came down to what I would candidly say is a commonplace farm on a village street with a mortgage as long as your arm.
Well, we've paid it off now, Sarah.
Took 10 years.
Come on, Tom.
Oh, shall I take your coat up for you?
I'm coming.
Put the kettle on, Violet, will you? We'll mash the tea when I come down.
I've started cutting the ham. I hope that's right.
I've brought a decent plum loaf up for John.
Oh, there's so much to eat.
You can't see the bed for coats.
Oh, it's a celebration.
And a fire. A fire in the bedroom when no one's ill.
Oh, it's dropping ash. I thought it'd be warm for you to take your bonnet off. You could put it on the bed knob so it won't crush.
Beef dinner for 30 the minute you're paid off. If you're not careful, Mary, you'll turn into your father all over again. My hair's coming down.
Father. Lying in this same bed, in this same room. Drunk. All red and laughing, holding onto the bedpost and shouting at the servants and at me. How old was I? 8?
And flowers in a bedroom exhaust the night air. I'd have thought with all your newfangled hygiene and every other high fiddlesticks, you'd have known that. Bedroom. Oh, no need to make a blaze. We're going down in a minute when I find my long hairpins. Mary. John's worked for 10 years.
We both have.
First time in your life you've lived in a farm without a mortgage. Don't get above yourself.
Mortgage? Terror of childhood. Like a great, footless, consuming, silent beast who would ooze out of the night sky, ooze through the night corridors and eat the house away, throw you in the street, take your food, take your clothes away. Every stick and stone, lassie. Every stick and stone.
If you're ready, Sarah, because the tea soon will be, and I think you'll enjoy it.
We all shall. Good trenchermen, we Robsons.
Would you fancy a slice more chicken, Mrs. Bannister?
Come on, Sarah. I'll carve you a slice.
Well, I don't know how you do it, Mary. Even with my delicate stomach, I can manage Mary's cheesecakes. Mm. They're so light. No wonder I can't get you to take up golf, Mary.
No, it was certainly a ghost and seen by Sir Michael's great-uncle. Or it might have been his great-great-uncle.
What do you think? I do believe you're holding Mary's hand under the table.
Oh, what do you say to that then, John?
The privilege of age.
But he's 87 next month, you know.
87, is he really?
Wait till you send your doilies to get them to stand up so nicely, Mary.
I do all the laundry here, Aunt Jane. Oh, now do try the ham, it's our own. Or a tea cake.
Well, start on the cheesecake.
There's spiced bread on the sideboard if anyone fancies it.
Oh,
that'd be fun. Will you set the glasses now?
Born a Robson, married to a Robson. Mary knows our preferences.
Oh, I think I do.
Yeah. Farm stock, farm food. Mm.
John!
Well then, Sarah.
Why didn't you show that short-horned bull of yours at York? You know there's nothing in the whole North Riding to beat it.
Well, we're not showing yet. True. It's too expensive.
I put the question to John.
The champagne, John, would you?
Oh, goodness me, Tom. Oh, one of you do stomach, Uncle Dickie. He's going to make a speech.
Oh, he always says something dreadful, then he can't sleep for nights afterwards.
Thank you. I thought we'd have some champagne as it's such a special day.
Oh, that's not expensive.
Well, we have come together on a most auspicious occasion. It's just 10 years since John crossed over the edge from Littledale and dug up his hat in Underby, as you might say. And as well as marrying our little lass, he married into a mortgage. A bad business, we all said it was, too.
Sorry.
And now they tell me the last payment's made. And the farm's back among us Robsons as it should be.
Oh, just keep the toe sticky.
Yeah, so it seems as if all it's wanting, when you think of it, John being near on 50, is for them to hurry up and get us a youngster to have the farm.
Oh, Dickie. Oh, my God, families.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you John and Mary Robson of Anderby Wold.
John and Mary.
John and Mary.
Us Robsons.
Forget the old ones. Cheers.
Well, come on then, John, let's have you.
Come on, John, speech.
Yes, you can come do on, it, John, come on.
Oh, no, no, I can't.
Come on.
Well, not any more than that gardener at Eden thought. When he had to reply to the vote of thanks up at all, he stood there, umming and awing, till his wife stands up and says, any talking that's done at our house, I do it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You all get up then, Mary.
Come on, Mary. I'm not much of a speech maker either.
Good.
I can only say thank you all very much for being here. And you, Uncle Dickie, for your good wishes.
Well,
I hope you'll all be here again off.
Sarah believes that Mary cares for nothing but her farm and that people should think she's a wonder.
John and I could never have managed if you had not stood behind us. It mayn't seem much to have done, but it's a great thing to us that Anderby's safe. I can't do better than the old toast. Here's to us, all on us, where we're never wanting out none on us. Nor you, nor me, nor any of us, nor me neither.
Oh. Well, 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 well.
The last glove has been found. The last dog cart has rumbled away. Coming back into the drawing room, among the squashed cushions and empty glasses, and the smells of drooping chrysanthemums, of pipe smoke and whiskey, John and Mary stand a little apart from each other. Shy.
I think that went off all right, don't you?
Says John, inscrutable as a cart horse.
John, I'm sorry about Uncle Dickie mentioning. I don't speak of it, but I do wonder sometimes. How much do you mind?
Don't you worry, honey. Can't be helped.
Did you think I'd cured that ham all right?
Only at the chicken.
Do you think they enjoyed themselves?
Et all right. Well, cows will still need milking come the morning.
He backs up, turns, and plods towards bed, knocking over a small table and sending a vase into the hearth. Mary kneels and picks up the pieces. The front door opens and Mary strides down the path, queening the clear light which shows her her own land stretching up the curve of the wolds under a wide blue sky. From his turnip cart, Mike rests his sheep's eyes upon her.
Well, Michael, it's a fine morning.
Aye, and a fine dinner it was you gave us yesterday, Mrs. Robson. Down at the Flying Fox, we were wishing it was you had your wedding anniversary every day.
I'm very glad I'm not, with all the washing up and laundering and sweeping I had to do.
Ah, never anything too much for you. I don't forget the 2 solid days and nights you sat with me when I had the bronchitis last winter.
I'll make you all wait till my silver wedding for another beef dinner. Now, look, I'll be late for decorating the Christmas tree up at the school.
But, you know, it's so tall this year. I can't tie anything on the top branches at all.
I don't think Mrs. Robson likes the stars on till after the oranges, Miss Taylor. Right. And the candles, the very last of all.
Yes.
Here she is. It's very good of you, Mrs. Robson. We were just wondering if you'd manage it this year with your party and everything.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We'll need a little stepladder, won't we, Mrs. Cole?
Oh, yes, of course.
Now then, Mrs. Yes. Taylor, I think it's a little overloaded on the left, don't you? So if you take down that tinsel there.
Certainly, Mrs. Robson.
Ah, oh, good morning, Vicar. Oh,
good morning.
Perhaps you could hold these steps for me while I... Oh, now, where's that box I brought?
As munificent as ever, Mrs. Robson.
Ah, Mr. Coase.
Nasty little eyes behind his pince-nez. Nasty way of chewing at that straggly moustache. Do you bite your moustache at me, sir? Oh, yes, he does. For the time I wouldn't let John write him a reference for the big grammar school job.
Well, Mr. Coast, don't you think we're doing rather well? Look, I bought us a box of blue decorations in Hampstead. We broke so many last year.
Very kind, I'm sure, Mrs. Robson. But we had already purchased a sufficiency of ornaments from the special fund.
Oh, I like to have lots. Don't you, Mrs. Coast?
Mrs. Robson's so thoughtful always. And I hate to see a tree looking bare.
Right, now, I'll have some red trumpets, please, Mr. Slater, for these top branches.
Yes, and Miss Taylor has the angel for the summit.
Oh, yes,
a German custom, you know.
Oh, yes.
Mrs. Robson.
I didn't know that. Yes?
There's a little matter I should like to speak to you about.
Certainly, Mr. Coase. What is it?
In private, please, if I may trespass a few moments on your valuable time.
Well, will it do when I've finished the tree?
Oh, of course. Naturally, it would be impossible to decorate a Christmas tree without Mrs. Robson's kind advice.
Good. Then would you hand me another star, please, Miss Taylor? Yes, Taylor.
Pray be seated.
Thank you.
Your husband has probably told you that the county council has made him a handsome offer to buy the paddock behind the school yard.
I must point out that the offer was made to me, Mr. Coast. The field is mine. How can he live in such a stuffy, cluttered house? Wax flowers under a glass dome. Books on the chiffonier. Essays on socialism. Capital by Karl Marx. And a flaming orange book, The Salvation of Society.
I understand that you have refused to sell.
The stream makes it an unsuitable place for the children to play in. Makes it convenient for us for washing sheets.
Oh, it is perfectly suitable, Mrs. Robson. It opens straight onto the playground and is level for games.
The stream cuts it almost in two.
I see you hardly know your own field. If you care to step down and
my
look,
good
sure...
man, don't tell me I don't know my own land. I've known that field since long before my courting days.
Oh, here you are. Down the paddock. I looked all over for you. The funeral party's at the house.
Oh, John.
Oh, the hawthorn blossoms dropping all over your black dress. Isn't it damp, sitting there? No warmth in the sun yet.
Well, I hadn't thought.
You need someone to think for you. Now your father's... Oh, I'm sorry.
Very kind of you, but I'll manage.
I'd be a happy man, Mary, if you'd let me manage with you.
Oh, John, you'll get your knees all muddy.
Am I too old for you?
John, it's not that. It's I must stop at Anderby.
I know that. You've been the farmer here since you were 16. I've watched... Would you let me stop along here? I'd do anything for you, Mary. Think a lot of you. Trust you. With everything about me.
Yes. Smell of the blossom. Feel of John's tweed jacket. And those few seconds by the stream. 18-year-old silliness. I shall always be willing to lend it for the children's games when we don't need it for the sheep or young horses. But I will not sell.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Robson, I know you're always willing to lend. Your land or your presents or your cart. It costs you nothing and it gives you a good deal of credit with a certain class of people. But to make a small sacrifice, it would be a great service to the village.
I think you forget yourself, Mr. Coast. Please understand, I will not sell.
Christmas comes and goes in a drift of sorrowful rain. Mary lies awake in a grey early morning, knowing the long drive to market this afternoon will be muddy and raw and fog-bound. Beneath the eiderdown, John is a sleeping walrus beside her.
Shall I light the candle, ma'am? And do you want the wall oven lit this morning?
Yes, please, Violet. I'll be baking for the Wesleyan tea. John's beard above the sheet. Wait for the question.
What's the time on it?
6:45. Every morning for 10 years and 6 weeks. Wait for the follow-up.
Is it time we were starting, eh?
As if you can't even decide that much for yourself. I think so. Violet's brought the hot water.
Suddenly, Mary would like him to look at her long hair and soft neck. She stalks the compliment.
Hey, John, what a giant you are. No wonder they call you Big John of Littledale.
His hand fails to find his dressing gown cord. He holds the garment around him, yawns, and slouches across the room without answering.
Keep that oven door shut now, Violet, or we'll lose the heat.
The tea's mashed. It's turned 11.
Oh, well, have a cheesecake if you're cool enough. Ah, perfect pork pie, fire drawing well. No one should ask for more. There. So, what's become of poor Fred Stevens, young lady? I thought you liked him so much.
Oh, he's that rough in his talk. When we go to the pictures, he just says, "Shove up, lass, if we've got to make room." Oh, but Percy, even if he does drink and all, he says, "Will you be so kind and pass a little further up the seat, please?" He works for a tailor, you know. Now, that could be a very sensible marriage.
But if it's Fred you love... If it's Fred you love, that's all that matters, Violet. It's not one single bit of good marrying someone you're not in love with.
Shall I take you straight to your Aunt Jane's? Or are you going to shops first?
Oh, drop me at Petunia Villa, same as usual, John.
Same as usual. With the ladies of the family and Aunt Jane and Uncle Dickie's small town drawing room. Oh, I don't know where my moods come from.
Mr. Jefferson, I have been buying silk from this establishment for over 35 years. But after this, never again.
We've not had Mrs. Grampian's monologue on the medical mission sale of work. Ah, oh, first Sarah's contribution on the question of servant's duty.
I can tell you that a maid of mine has never left the house on her Sunday off till the supper table's laid and the back scullery washed down and mopped dry.
But she told me they're going to have all the privet out and then put railings. They do like to be better than the rest of us.
I wouldn't pay by compassion. You keep your butter, I said. I'll send a harder slip for mine in future, I said. That brought him round.
Hard to believe that half these women lived on farms once, got up at 5 like me, cooked for 15 labourers like I do, raised great families like... The country's stronger than they are. Works them, breeds from them, drains them, then cuts them like dead sticks into the tidy streets of Market Burton. And their talk's got as much meaning as the noise of dry leaves blowing on pavements.
Any more tea? Oh, my cook's given notice. Well, and you know, Harrogate hasn't done my nerves the slightest bit of good this year.
I'll die in harness like a cart horse. Never be like this. Worst of all, to be like Sarah. Still grudges her brother to me. Stews in venom, scraggy old hawk, watching and hating every change on the farm.
Hello. I've only dropped in for a moment. No sugar, thank you, Aunt Jane. Now, this is Ursula.
Hello.
She plays golf, you know. Championship golf.
I should be home. We've got people in for bridge tonight. But Foster would go down to the market. Such a
ball. Yes, she plays bridge. And she drives herself about in a motor car.
Oh, those suede gloves will have cost a pretty penny.
Be careful, you spill my tea.
Well, they've all set up now you've come in. Little fires in the dry kindling.
What?
How's John?
Sarah's noticing how short your skirt is.
You've not answered my question.
John's all right.
John's all right. It's Mary who isn't. I'm turning very odd.
Did you see Foster in the marketplace? That hat! I said I'd dance on it, but he still sticks it on his head. What would you do to stop him wearing it, Mary?
I'd burn it.
Oh. There. After all that careful tongue-holding this afternoon, now I've uttered another of my famous remarks. All next week it will go about Market Burton.
She said to burn it. She said she put Foster's hat on the fire. Mary Robson burnt her husband's suit because she didn't like it. Oh, she always was headstrong.
Foster's going to Scotland next week.
You'll go too, then?
The doctor says I'd better stay put for the moment.
Oh, Ursula. Oh, you don't mean... Have you told anyone?
I want you to tell them, but not till I've gone. They make such an ungodly fuss.
So, you're doing your duty for the Robsons, then?
I wish Foster wasn't leaving me alone. I'd like a tiny bit of attention.
Come to Enderby Wold.
I mean, the village keeps me very busy, but... Oh, John's so silent. Oh, would you like a bit of company? Oh, do come to us for a visit.
You're sure the journey didn't tire you? I should have had Violet light a fire in here. Now, these two drawers are empty, so I'll help you unpack.
Open my dressing case, Mary, and powder your nose. Go on, and try my perfume. Foster brought it from London.
Well, I'll leave you to have a cup of tea and rest a minute. I have to be at the school.
You can't go out. I've only just got here. That's really rude. Now, look at this nightgown. That is genuine Brussels lace.
This is a boy John needs on the farm this spring, and Mr. Coast is making trouble about it. He says he hasn't reached the sixth grade. Well, he's 13.
Blouses on the left, please. Oh, and I need more hangers, Mary.
Well, I'll get you some. A great boy of 13 chalking pictures at a school desk. We need him on the farm.
Mary, I want you to take an interest in clothes more. You're only 28, but you dress like a schoolmarm yourself. I am here on a mission of mercy to make you take an interest in your appearance.
It's all very well for you, Ursula, but I have to run a village. Now, there's the tea. Bye-bye.
I've brought you your breakfast in bed and a fresh hot water bottle. There you are, and this old shawl for your shoulders.
Oh, Mary, you're forever bearing thoughtful trays. I've got my satin bed jacket, so there's no need...
Now then, what about a book? There's nothing to hurry downstairs for.
I'm pregnant. I'm not an invalid. I want to get up and have you show me this famous village of yours. So if Violet will just run me a bath...
Oh, well, we've no bathroom yet. I've only had a maid for 6 months. That mortgage...
No bathroom? Oh, you poor things. If I don't have a bath every morning, I feel positively filthy.
We're going to have to re-roof these cottages this spring. All money. Oh, morning, Hal. Good morning, Michael.
And a fine one for two fine young ladies to be walking out. Oh, and thanks for the embrocation, Mrs. Robson.
You just take care you use it. Morning, Mrs. Watts. Wave to her. She doesn't know we can't hear her through the window.
A royal progress. And who's this one coming along?
Oh, be careful of that puddle. It's a schoolmaster. Good morning, Mr. Coast.
Oh, is he deaf?
I think the sun was in his eyes.
Mary, now that thing's paid off, why don't you take up golf? Live a normal life. Break out a bit. Just because dear old John's 50, you don't have to...
Oh, this place is all that I care about.
I don't believe you. You need... Perhaps you need to do your wifely duty and have rows of little babies all in frills.
Well, it just doesn't seem to happen. Anderby's more than children to me. I know I can make it the most prosperous, the best cared for village in the whole North Riding. And that's more to me than frills and gallivanting.
Hello, Mr. Fawcett. Have you got a book that'll interest John for his birthday?
You're looking tired, Mrs. Robson.
Oh, well, we've had the Institute dance and the hospital whist drive and two new babies all inside a week at Enderby. I think he'd like something about farming, something fresh. I think we've both been a bit dull since my sister-in-law's visit finished.
Now, for excitement, I think I can safely recommend... Yes, the... Salvation of Society by David Rossiter, a young author, even a little rash in his views, I'm told. Your schoolmaster, Mr. Coast, purchased a copy.
Oh, let's see. Society, where? What? Society is perishing from senile decay. Tyranny based on material advantage. Oh. Well, I think this might spark John up. I might even read it myself beforehand.
Yes, I glanced at it and found it quite intriguing.
It's a quiet birthday, John.
Hmm?
Nothing.
I'm a quiet man.
I'm not taking your nose out of that book all evening. I'll mend the fire.
No, no. Soon be bedtime. Save coal.
Of course, it's a lot of nonsense. I mean, sharing the profits with the labourers instead of giving them wages. I suppose we must be what he calls a self-interested bourgeois minority, the capitalists. What does proletarian mean, John? Do you know, he got sent away from university for his ideas. Mr. Fawcett at the bookshop said so. He's touring all England now, investigating agricultural conditions. He must be a young firebrand. What do you think of him, John? What do you think of the book?
Just a minute.
Oh, I've been dying to know what you'd say to it all. He doesn't know much about farming, does he? How far have you got?
Page 121.
Well, what have you got to say?
That it's 10 past 10. Bedtime, Mrs. Pull the coals out of the fire.
March sunshine on the sprouting wheat. Cirrus cloud high in the wide blue sky. Mary, walking back from Littledale, finds that she wants to race with the wind, to jump, to shout, to sing. Good land lies all around her, marled, manured, ploughed by countless Robsons before her grandfather and then father and now John.
Fiddlesticks to that Mr. Rossiter who thinks it is easy to own land. It owns you if you care for it, and I do.
No!
Who's that? Eli, wait! Stop beating that boy!
He's an Islam, ma'am. Needs a bit of stick.
Come here, Jack.
Oh, Mia.
Now, what have you done? Mia.
10 o'clock, I sent him to get a cart forked up with turnips, and our leader has nowt done and he's nowt to say.
So you send a boy scarce out of school to do work you're supposed to do yourself, to fork turnips into a cart he's too small to reach?
He's idle. I'll do it.
It's not the first time, wait. We don't beat boys at anger, you've been told before. Come on, now, stop crying, Jack. You're not hurt, really. Ears always bleed a lot. Wait! I'm ashamed of you. You can load up fast enough without the boy now I'm here. Well, you can stop it. You're dismissed from this moment.
Damn you, missus.
March. Mary is driving home from seeing Ursula at Hardrasscliffe along a dark and windswept road.
Come on, Starlight. Up. Only 2 miles more and you'll be in a dry stable.
The new mincing machine slides from under the seat alongside the flannel for Mrs. Burton and the currants for her own kitchen.
Whoa! Stop there! Whoa! Now what's the matter? Steady on. Now. Oh, now there's a brilliant moment to go lame. You had to wait till the hail started, didn't you, silly old boy? Come on, come on, you're all right now. Stand still. There's it. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Is anything wrong? Oh. Can I help?
Oh, you're frightening the horse. Well, hold the lantern. Have you got a knife?
Can't I do it for you? Your skirt's getting muddy.
No, it's not. Oh, hands are so cold. Look, open the blade or something. Come on, now, stand up, will you? Stand there. Now, don't come on, we don't want to be trampled to death. Stupid stone.
Won't
come
you
on.
Let me try?
Oh, very well then. There. All right. Steady, now. Steady.
Got it!
Starlight, now, come on. Whoa, whoa, steady, boy. Are you hurt?
No. Bone's broken. Now, the patient needs a moment's quiet.
Oh, I'm very sorry. I was being so horrid to you because... Well, you startled me, you see, and really I was longing for someone to come.
I think I'm going to be sick. I'm most awfully sorry.
Where did he kick you? Oh, is it bad?
I'm no more than winded. I'm all right now.
All right. Right, steady, boy. Look, I think you'd better get up on the cart.
Oh, right.
Let's get you in
up first. I come.
All right. Hold tight. Sorry. He always starts off like that.
I should have held on to him when I got the stone out. I always ruin things just at the end.
You sound like me. No matter how clever I've been up till then, in the finish, all I remember is the one stupid thing.
Mary hears the excitement in her own voice, as if something wonderful is going to happen. She pulls herself together. She is doing no more than giving a lift to a stranger on a cold, wet night.
Where are you going to?
Where are you going?
Anderby Wold.
That's where I'm going.
But...
I'm a sort of journalist, studying the life of agricultural labourers. Juicy statistics about capitalist farmers.
Oh...
Do you know anything about them?
Yes, a good deal. I am one.
Oh, my sworn enemy. Achoo. Oh, don't you think you'd better set me down? You're carrying a traitor into your camp. A rabid socialist.
Nothing so romantic. You're just a young boy with a bad cold... It's coming home to my spare bedroom with a fire in the grate the minute Violet can get it lighted.
Hold your pyjama jacket away, Mr. Rossiter. It'll be all over embrocation.
Don't you see? That so-called cooperation fostered from above will never lead to constructive reform. It's repressive.
Hello, Annette.
John, this is Mr. David Rossiter, the author of your new book.
Oh.
Starlight kicked him. Mr. Rossiter, this is my husband.
How do you do? I didn't think to meet you.
How do you do? I feel at a social disadvantage. Now I see why these pyjamas hang down over my hands.
They're some of yours, John. You don't mind. Miss Shepherd, any black lambs for me?
Twins, this last half hour. We got the shelter done in time. I'll push off to bed, I think.
Right.
It'll be an early start. Well, good night, all. Good night. Hope you get a good night, Mr. Rossiter.
Good night. Ah, you tickling.
Now, you need this flannel tucked right round under your arms. There.
Anyway, I was talking about...
Oh, you're going to have a shocking cold, Mr. Rossiter. Now, there's candles and matches on the table.
I think you're enjoying my bad health. As I lose everything about me, I can't find my handkerchief.
Here. Now, you stay put in the morning and sleep well.
She takes her candle and has to restrain a silly impulse to stoop and kiss him. As one might kiss a child, she tells herself hastily. She goes to her bedroom, where John is already deep in his walrus sleep beneath the bedclothes. Towards him, she has no impulses that she need restrain.
You're not a farmer, Mr. Rossiter. You've lived in a big country house and read books by Germans and cranks at Oxford. And from the other side of the hedge, you pretend you know more about farming than John and me. Now, stand over there and pull the sheet tight, will you? Tight. That's it.
You only know what you've let your villagers be. I know what they could be.
Now, hold those two sides and I'll pin them sides to middle. No. My point is that your talk of small holdings for each man, it's absurd on farms where you grow wheat or rear sheep. It's a waste of land. Labourers might have been underpaid 50 years ago, but when your cold's a bit better, I'll take you round and you'll see how well I look after ours here in Anderby today.
But what hope is there for them when their happiness has to depend on your philanthropy instead of their own rights? Ow!
What?
You put a pin in my finger.
Oh, I'm sorry. There. Thank you. You know, never in my life before have I argued with someone for 3 days on end and yet felt in better humour every moment. Would you put some more coal on the fire?
You're shirking the issue, which is about the independence and dignity of the labourers themselves. If you and John were rotters, Anderby wouldn't be fit to live in.
Have a piece of the top we made last night and make your mind up to stay here until you are perfectly well. Consider yourself a captive of the soft-living bourgeoisie.
If I stay any longer, I shall like you and your husband. Too much to hate you. As it is, every time you are nice to me, I have to recite marks to myself to remind myself what an abomination you really are.
Oh, put a piece in your mouth. One for me. Now, recite some marks.
Nowhere does the antagonistic character of capitalist production assert itself more brutally than in the progress of English agriculture and the retrogression of the English agricultural labourer.
You're dribbling.
Mr and Mrs Bannister, ma'am.
Violet! Violet, there's a smudge on your cheek and your apron's dirty, sheets and cut threads over every chair.
No need to stand on ceremony, Violet.
Oh, my God.
Sarah, how nice of you. Meet our guest, Mr Rossiter. Mrs Bannister, Mr Bannister.
How'd you do? Well, I'll go and dig out one of those young horn beams John said I could have, if you'll excuse me.
Well, what a surprise. John's over at Littledale, or I'd ask you to stop for tea.
Well, we'll see how late he is. We're in no hurry.
Is there any news?
I've been to visit Ursula. Quite right for her to look after herself. It looks as if it'll be the only child in that generation of Robsons.
I suppose it does.
A comfort to know that their place at least will not pass into the hands of strangers.
I hear that you're having your house painted.
That had been my intention.
Well, have you had problems?
I don't have problems with dependents, Mary. I simply dismiss them.
But what happened?
They began last Tuesday. We were to have 3 coats of good dark green.
And did Mr. Billings want to paint you red?
And then, when I wanted them to stay on no more than 5 or 10 minutes in the evening to clean off round the front doorbell, you know how messy the paint is if it's left overnight, they said, if you please and by your leave, that their union wouldn't let them work overtime. At my own front door, they told me that.
Sarah, I don't know what I'm thinking of. You must come along upstairs and leave your cloak. Oh, and is that a new bonnet?
Mrs. Bannister, don't you think there is something to be said for the union?
Mr. Rossiter, if you could give Mr. Bannister a hand in the garden.
Now, young man, you may be very clever. All you young folk today think you know everything. They told me at Ardcliffe that you are a socialist or some such.
David's eyes sparkle, and Mary's appealing glance at him has as much effect as it would on a foaming charger which has just heard the bugle sound for battle. He starts quietly, speaks faster, and at the end of 8 minutes is still going at full gallop.
You shut yourselves up in snug little houses and say, no change will come. We, the middle class, the half-cultured, half-emancipated, half-refined middle class with our safe bank balances, are the salt of the earth. We are in power. Fools and extremists may rage and storm outside our gates. Well, I tell you that your gates are shut, not to shield you from the change, but to blind your eyes to it until it is too late to see. A new generation knocks at your door, respecting themselves, not their so-called superiors. You can't shut them out, but they may shut you in.
Oh, Mr. Rossiter, do stop, please.
Thank you, Mary, for this most unusual form of entertainment. As John is not back, we had better be getting along.
Mrs. Bannister, I'm most awfully sorry. I shouldn't have ranted on. Only that is my chief thought, night and day. Shall I leave the room? Mrs. Robson only took me in because I had a cold in the head, just out of kindness.
I assure you it makes no difference to me what you say. I am sure my sister-in-law chooses her guests without reference to the feelings of her relations. But let me tell you that I have read all that sort of stuff in the papers that my maids leave around the house. You and your like nearly always end in prison, and a lot of fuss over nothing. Mary, tell that gardener, stableman, whatever he is of yours, to bring my dog cart round, if you please.
It was very kind of you to call.
Oh, Mrs. Robson, I was insufferable. I can't tell you how sorry I am.
Oh, don't be upset. I'm sure it must do Sarah good to have a mental shaking up now and then.
You've been so good to me, and I'm rude to your guest. I've got to go out now into your village and tell your labourers that they're ill-treated and generally unsettled things that are quite happy as they are. And there's no knowing where it'll all end.
There is no knowing. When he looks at me like that across the table.
I'll have to leave now. Today.
You can't help it. You're made like that. I think it's far better to be carried away by your ideas than to have no ideas at all. There have been moments, Mr. Rossiter, when...
Hello, then. Keeping yourselves amused, I hope. Now, what's for tea?
Mr. Rossiter's going to leave us, John.
To preach his socialism? That's a fool's job, lad. You'll get small change out of Anderby. Far better stay here and amuse Mary. You know, she looks a deal brighter since you're coming.
I've tried to stop him, but he's going. Today.
At 6 o'clock the next evening, all Anderby is having tea. From 50 chimneys in the valley rise columns of white smoke. At the Wold farm, Mary and John sit in silence over boiled eggs, while their yesterday's guest sits alone among the china spittoons and cold tobacco smoke smells of the green-painted, sawdust-floored smoke room of the Flying Fox. As he has not the price of a set supper, he sets himself, instead, to warm his hands at the tiny hearth.
Praise be my Lord for our brother fire, bright and pleasant, mighty and strong.
Oh, you still here?
Mrs. Todd, there's no flames left at all.
That fire has the last till closing time. I dare say it'll burn through in an hour or two. When the paying customers come in.
David passes those hours in nostalgia for Mary Robson's warm house, her buttered tea cakes, her hot whiskey and homemade cheese.
I'm not a genuine enthusiast at all. I don't want to talk to labourers about their lost souls.
Steps sound in the passage. The latch rattles. And the sacked labourer, Eli Waite, comes into the room and flings himself on the settle. Ezra Dawson follows him. Silence.
Your wife's had her fourth, then. That were early.
Here's luck to her. And the child. I've no drink, but here's luck.
Luck? Tell me luck. Well, master sends Mrs. Spine on you in the fields and you won't lick her boots like other fond fools and she gets you chucked out. Ah, that's luck.
Who was it turned you out?
Who does out in this village? Who kept schoolmaster from a better job? Who pays starvation wages and stops the women's mouths with slices of Christmas cake and Easter buns? You ask Ezra here if Willoughby's weren't going to pay his mate Wilson £3 a year more till Robson's told them what they'd paid their men and warned them to go no higher.
Oh, now, come on, Eli.
That's right.
She's all right, is our Mrs. Robson.
Well, you haven't.
By 9 o'clock, the room holds more than a dozen men from the village, glass in hand, beer in belly. The fire blazes a red shine onto all the faces as they turn in one direction to where David, hair in a fiery halo, arms flailing, blazes too.
Beasts! Beasts! And you were born to be gods!
Keep it up, sir! You're getting them to see that the farmers are enemies. I'll tell you tonight, I've heard my own ideas better said than I could have spoken them. I'm a man transformed.
Why don't you get up now and demand a higher wage? Well, I'll tell you. Because there is no cooperation among you.
David speaks more quietly, explaining to them how to form an agricultural union. As he talks, his eyes go to the uncurtained window and the round moon riding high, followed by tattered clouds. For some seconds, He feels the emptiness of his rhetoric, the hopelessness of what he is trying to do. Then the Irishman, full of Guinness, speaks David's own doubts.
Sure, and it isn't Michael O'Flynn you'll be telling as a beast. Without feeling the weight of his fist for your troubles.
So you're satisfied with your condition, are you?
I'll fell the man with a word to say against farmers, the same including our Mrs. Robson. For when I had the pneumonia and the pain in my chest.
Come on, Michael. We've heard that one a time too many. Have you got more to say, Mr. Rossiter?
No. No, I think I'll take a turn outside and stretch my legs.
Clear up.
Maybe I'll see you all here tomorrow night.
Out in the chill and dark, the moon still mocks his fiery talk. He feels despicable for rousing Mary's own workmen against her.
Well, it seems that we are fated to meet on the road at night.
Florence Nightingale, with a napkin-covered basket on your arm.
You look so startled. Do walk up to our house and have some hot whiskey and lemon with John. Mrs. Watts is ill, so I must just run up there first.
No, really, no.
He tries to raise his hat, finds he is not wearing one, turns and hurries off in confusion, leaving himself and Mary deeply upset.
Thomas, was your silly auntie crushing your tootsies then? Oh, hush, my little lamb.
Mary, babies should learn not to be dandled about all day like handbags. Do put him back in his cot.
Oh. Don't you want to cuddle him and say silly things? I thought all mothers would. I'm sorry, baby. Mother's orders.
Congratulations. Thank you. It's not the Robson name, but that's up to Mary.
Fine pair of lungs he's got.
You must be pleased it was a boy. Oh, it's like a florist in here. Overheated. We only brought these few daffodils.
How sweet. Ring for nurse, Mary.
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, Mary, your little friend's brought out a regular stinger in this week's Clarion.
My little friend?
Oh, a socialist chap who sat Sarah by the ears. Rossiter. Coddling and short, the article's called. Coddling your men and paying them short. And there's a bit about snatching boys out of school before the legal age. Oh, a regular stinger. You don't let her see.
Mary?
Yes?
Give me that little flowered cushion for my head. And look at the necklace Foster's bought me. Who's a handsome baby, then?
Stifling. Suddenly, Mary finds the complacent smells of talcum powder and hot milk and perfume overwhelming. Her hand darts to the newspaper Tom has brought with him.
Oh, Ursula, I've suddenly remembered an errand. I'll have to go. Tell John to wait for me if he arrives.
Out now, quick, away into the shower-washed streets above the grey and silver sea, along past flat-chested boarding houses to a chilly seat in a glass shelter on the esplanade.
Oh, David. David. Shame. Made myself a laughingstock. Too many feelings. Seeing him again in the village last week. Just asking him to tea and he's...
I'm sorry. I have an appointment with Mr. Coast.
With Mr. Coast? And now he's writing all these articles in the newspapers. He shouldn't. He should talk to me about them. I do understand. Of course I understand. What does he say?
You, the masters of hired labour, think you hold certainty over men being worth. Those alone are kings and queens who sit enthroned above their generation and rule circumstance.
Rule circumstance? See Sarah's face. But I could, if it was best for Anderby. I'd call him back. Help him form a union. A change.
John! John, stop, stop, I'm here! I want you to take me home. Take me back to Anderby.
How's the matter, honey? What about visiting Ursula?
Straight home, please. Now.
She She sits beside John, and they turn back to the safety of the village.
There was a note from Coe saying he'll not let the boys out brassicking. In trouble, that Mr. Coast of ours. She'd got that job and left us.
Oh, always trouble. You're as bad as Sarah. You grumble on as if you're an old man. Oh, I'm sorry, John, really. Please forgive me, I've got such an awful headache.
It's the babby that's upset you.
No!
There's the whist drive for the summer outing coming up. Haven't that'll help.
You're forgetting your prize, Miss Taylor. You won the toast rack.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Robson.
And all the leftover chicken sandwiches are on the side for anyone to take home if they'd like to.
Really, I don't know how you do it, Mrs. Robson. You quite transformed this old schoolroom of ours.
Yes, I congratulate you.
Say goodnight.
Yes, good night, Miss Taylor. Good night. Yeah, 2 shillings multiplied by 56. Oh, yes, the children's summer outing fund will benefit greatly from this whist drive. No wonder you look a little tired. Coast, fetch Mrs. Robson. Cloak, will you?
I'm sorry, I'm in a hurry. I've got all this rum to put straight before the children get here in the morning.
Oh, come, Coast.
Well, I'll stay and help you, Mr. Coast.
Of course you would. Good night, Miss Dawson. Night, Miss Sweet.
Good night, Sinclair. Good night,
Mrs. I'll see you to the door. I'll see you to the door, Mrs. Robson. You've been looking quite off colour for weeks past.
I do seem a bit done up, thank you. Well, good night, Mr. Coast. Good night, Mrs. Coast.
She did provide a lovely supper, Ernie.
For God's sake, don't call me Ernie.
I'm sorry, Ern. Mr. Coast. Shall I make us a cup of cocoa?
Cocoa? No. My head's thumping with the racket from those toadian villagers. And I've got all these desks to put back. Not that I get gracious thanks from the vicar or anyone else for my contribution to the fund.
I'll help you.
I'll go to bed. Anyway, I've got a letter to write, too.
Who's the hot pot, then? And who's the Manchester tart?
I'm the tart.
Just coming, sir.
Here's me.
One moment. Just finishing this sentence. Good day. I think we've met.
Hunting's the name. Secretary of the FLU. I wrote the letter in last month's Clarion, which was printed next to your article.
Oh, will you sit down?
Can't spare long. I've had a rather intelligent letter from the schoolmaster in the village where you did some propaganda work. Anderby.
Was his name Coase?
Ask me to form an Anderby branch of the Agricultural Labourers' Trade Union.
Oh.
You don't sound overjoyed.
They're not ready for it. Not in Anderby, no. Except for one or two with a personal axe to grind.
Coase thinks differently. He wants me to go over there and have a look round. I shall need your notes on the place. If you've made any.
This sticks like a lump of still dinosaurus. I wish he wasn't Coast.
Wish he wasn't... What have you got against the man?
I don't like his moustache.
Oh! Put out the lantern there, Ezra. The dawn shone through the window.
She's done it again. Mrs. Robson always manages to choose a perfect June day for wagon day and the children's outing.
And our Dolly and Polly look fit for the forest prize, don't you, my beauties? Worth repainting the wagon for a pair like you, then, eh? Eh? Aye. Come on, then. Let's have your mane and get some scarlet ribbons in it.
Go on. What do you make of that chap hunting at Flying Fox last night?
I'd say he had only the one fault.
Oh, what was that then?
That he was born at all. Bad cess to him. Ranting and raving as if he was the Holy Father himself. Could be. Stand, girl, stand.
Bet you're going to join the Union, then?
Join the Union? Union of fools, I call it. They'll soon discover that the Union won't put a head on the beer or keep mud off their leggings in foul weather. Come on, get up here. Get up, come on. Union won't pick a day like today. Look at it. There's a cloud in the whole sky for all the children to go on the seaside outing. Unions, don't you go joining no unions, Ezra Dawson. Better enjoy what's to be thankful now. Right, now tack up, Dawson. What about it?
So, wagon day is patronage. But would David grudge the children their trip? Yes. He'd say I shouldn't have organised it for them.
Won't be starting off, Mum?
Shh!
my dolly off to the seaside.
Well, you tell your dolly to watch Mr. Coast in the front wagon. He's going to stand up and give three cheers for Sir Charles. And you've got to shout out as loud as anything. And then he'll give three cheers for Mrs. Robson. And you shout even louder for that one. And then he'll hold his whip up and shout, "Drive on," and off we'll go.
Quiet, quiet, please.
See, he's starting.
Three cheers for Sir Charles Seaton. Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Right. And now, drive on.
No!
Oh!
Oh,
he never did the other one. What about Mrs. Robson?
Oh, never mind.
Keep smiling. Wave if they wave. I'm going to cry. I'd like to shake Mr. Coast till his pince-nez fly off their string. Pain. Don't let anyone see. There. All gone.
5 weeks pass, with Mary in her summer village, but not of it. She reads the cuttings and leafs through every memory of the days David spent at her house.
Shameful. Besotted with a socialist. Or mad. Am I mad? Perhaps he doesn't exist. I never see him.
We're glad to have an early night as soon as we're home. These beast markets. Terrible noisy things.
Slow down, John. There's people on the bridge.
Oh, up. Not hunting again, I suppose.
You have a right to a living wage. And a right to have your children educated up to the legal age, but to exercise those rights, you must band together. Unity is strength.
Good evening, Mrs. Robson. Evening, sir.
Get up there, Starlight. Wasn't that fella standing on the parapet talking, the same one that stayed at our house in the spring, Rossiter?
I think it was. He seemed to catch my eye for a moment. Can't be sure.
He's a clatterbrain. Well, there's no harm in him that a few years and a good wife won't cure. Oh, now you've smelt your stable. Well, I dare say the union's got to come. Invite Rossiter to call if you see him. Willoughby says the union's no trouble, where master and men get on all right.
Oh. John, you make the union sound like a dose of mumps or something.
Oh, I didn't mean to offend, honey.
I wonder if Mr. Rossiter will call on us.
He says he's getting a tandem. He says he'll take me rides all the way to Addriscliff on my day off.
For goodness sake, Violet, bring me that sheet and put the lid on the copper. I can't see for steam.
I think you're out of sorts, Mrs. Robson. I think it'd do you good to have days off, same as what I do. I'll mash you some tea in a minute.
Help me wring this sheet. You get above yourself, Violet.
Stuck in the house all day yesterday with only Mr. Robson for company. I don't know why you didn't go a visit.
I thought someone might be calling here. You didn't.
Are we going to wash all the lace curtains like you said we would the next fine wash day? We haven't got any dinner to make with Mr. Robson over at Littledale.
No. Stifling here. You can drain the copper. The moment I've hung this last line of washing out, I'm going to change my clothes and go for a walk. A long walk.
Within half an hour, Mary is out of the stackyard and climbing up the chalk hill road that glares white under the fierce July sun. She is ready to cry. Readier when she hears footsteps on the dry road behind her. No privacy. A bramble catches the pale green muslin of her skirt, pricks her thumb, and springs up to catch her sleeve as she releases it.
Oh!
Let me help you.
I heard someone. I had no idea it was you.
Violet told me you'd put on your best dress and set off up the hill. I nearly had a heart attack trying to keep up with you.
You did call, then? I'd hoped that you'd call.
I wanted to apologise somehow. I'm not over fond of Mr. Hunting, and I know you hate interference in your village,
though I mean it's no more yours, really, that... Mr. Robson, you look very pale.
I think it's the heat.
You'd better sit down. You've no idea what bliss this is beside Manchester. Oh, I could lie here forever.
David, lying beside me among the scented grasses beneath the hedge. Convolvulus, like a wreath in his hair. Pimpernel, less than a caress away. So you've cycled here, all that way, and in such heat.
I've been thinking an awful lot about you lately. It's dreadful that we should have to be enemies when I do think you are so splendid.
What does that mean? Splendid? His eyes are so wide. Am I leaning towards him? He is to me. Oh, kiss. Arms around each other. Did he mean to? Did I make him? Smell his skin. Feel the roughness of his beard. Weep. A sound in the road on the other side of the hedge. Oh, no. Shame. The back of John's head. Up, down, riding back from Littledale. Oh, God, did he see? He'd have stopped. No. Go. David, go. I don't know what... Just go quickly, please.
Somehow, after two dreadful hours... She has composed her swollen face enough to be able to take herself sedately back to the farm. The doctor's dog cart stands outside. The doors are open and all is in confusion.
Oh, Mum, I thought you'd never come. The master's had a stroke.
It's almost 10 days now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Tell him he's doing fine and that he can get up on Saturday as long as he takes it easy. That's all right, Mrs. Robson. I'll see myself out.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
Mrs. Robson?
Yes?
That farmer from over the wold is here.
The young one, Bert Armstrong.
I put him in the dining room.
I'll see him. Good morning, Bert. What can I do for you?
Well, good morning. I'm very sorry to hear of Mr. Robson's illness.
Thank you. He's got his speech back today. He's getting better. Oh. You've come about the union wage demand, I dare say.
Hunting's putting them up to saying that if they don't get £3.10 a week, they won't bring the harvest in. Well, it'll ruin me to pay that, Mrs. Robson. It's all right for you big farmers. And they say with you being in with Mr. Rossiter and all...
Oh, I see. So that's what they say while I'm... end up seeing to my invalid, that I'm well enough off to amuse myself with a bit of socialism.
It's not that I grudge the money. It's just that I've not got it. We lost 13 cows this spring and
I'd better tell you what I told Mr. Hunting when he showed his face at my door. I said that if ever there was a real need, then I would raise the wages. But I'd fight all men from Manchester with their half-baked ideas of reform. I'd fight them to my last sheaf of corn and my last penny. Now you can report those words as mine to anyone you care to in the village.
You're not going to pay, then?
If the men strike, then the farmers'll get their own harvest in. If it ever comes to that, which I doubt. And we'll all turn a hand to each other's farms.
It's a weight off my mind to hear you say that. I've not been sleeping.
Mary sends Bert away cheerful, and then turns back to the darkness of her own house. Easy to deal with agitators with threats of strikes. Easier than to enter John's bedroom and look once more for signs in his face that he saw her in the field with David, that has caused his stroke.
Well, John, doctor's pleased. And Sarah sent 6 peaches.
Oh.
Would you like one with your lunch?
Any talk of that hunting?
No. No, not a word. Everything's quite normal.
That Rossiter still here?
No. Why should he be? He left on that Monday after we saw him on the bridge.
Oh, did you speak to him at all?
He called that Monday afternoon when you were taken ill.
I thought Violet said you were out.
He followed me up the lane to apologise for behaving as he has done after being a guest here. John, what is it?
It gets boring down here with nought to do.
Oh, well, I've got a letter to write, so I'll go down now and do that, and then I'll bring you up a tray.
Back in the dining room, Mary takes David's well-worn, still unanswered letter from her pocket.
Dear Mrs. Robson, I cannot imagine what you think of me.
No, that's clear enough. But he has not the slightest idea that for 2 hours after he left me there in the field, I planned to follow him to Haddrescliffe Station and then to... anywhere.
What happened in the cornfield was my own fault, but not my intention. Please believe me that it was quite unpremeditated.
Of all messages, the one I least wanted to hear from you. Dear Mr. Rossiter, I quite understand. I expect it was the hot afternoon. Now we will forget all about it.
Are you in there, ma'am?
Yes, Violet, what is it?
I need the key for the dairy. The cat's been at the butter again.
I'll see to it, then. Ah, oh, Violet, you put the groceries away, will you? And take the library books through to Mr. Robson, not the newspapers.
I don't like keeping things from him. It isn't right.
He's not well enough to be worried yet. Give me the clarion.
Michael Flynn's hovering outside the door, twisting his cap into a plait.
Come inside, Michael. I can't leave these damsons. Now, what is it?
The foreman sent me up and said I wish to report myself.
Oh, what about?
On account of me uttering curses at all and any who join that Mr. Rossiter's thing of a union. On account of offering to fill in the dust...
Well, foreman's quite right not to want you making any more trouble than there already is in the village. But I can't bring myself to be angry with you. Oh. I need your help, Michael. Hey? Mr. Robson's sick and I dare say would give in to the union threats. So if it comes to a strike, would you and your Irish friends help us and help the other farmers?
Anything and... in all heaven and earth that I can do for you, ma'am, and no thought of myself in it. Oh, these troublemakers need destroying entirely. I'll do it for you.
It may all come to nothing. It may all just be talk.
Mrs. Robson, are you awake?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but there's a crowd of men standing in the yard.
Oh, I'll come then. Now, John, you stay here in bed.
I'm coming too.
Look, it's my farm.
I'm coming down with you, honey.
Well, man, what is it?
We ain't going to work today, mister.
Oh,
no, right.
Why is that?
We want a living wage.
Aye, a living wage.
How much?
£3.
£3.10, you fool.
£3.10.
You have a living wage now. Who's ever gone hungry or ill-clothed in this village?
I could speak for that.
Except by choice and by pride, Eli Waite.
Farmers is tyrants.
Tyrants, are we?
Quiet them down, honey, and they'll give in. Their heart's not in it. You can see.
John, if you want to work for us, you'll work on our terms. You've had too much mollycoddling here. We'll be masters of our own land, my husband and me. Or we'll go somewhere else.
We must do what our branch secretary says.
Oh, so you'd rather follow a hot-brained tub-thumper from Manchester than the family who've looked after this village since the time of the Danes?
Just offer them an extra 10 shillings and they'll start work again.
Go on, then. Strike, you fools. And when you come back here whining for work, we'll see who's master then. See if your branch secretary from Manchester can find you a living wage then.
All right, missus, that's it. The strike's on. And you bent shut of us yet.
For the first time in his life, John is really angry with Mary. As the men slouch out of the yard, he rounds on her.
Well, missus, you've done it now. You've really done it now. I thought you had more sense.
And I thought you had more spirit.
Have you had enough, dear?
Pass Queen Gates to Aunt Jane, would you, Ursula?
These childless women. Lovely. I'm sure if she had any feeling, she'd take John away from Anderby. First a stroke and then a strike.
Well, being an invalid, one's nerves get shattered. Like the time I came back from Harrogate and found that Lily had given notice.
I'm glad to see the doctor allows you so much cake, Aunt Jane.
Oh, well,
of course, I'm very fond of Mary. But she does always seem so terribly pleased with herself.
Oh, that she does.
I suppose women with that rather domineering temperament don't have any deep feelings. No, they just love a fight.
Well, it wouldn't do Mary any harm to hear a few home truths.
Well, that I have to agree with you.
Mrs. Mary Robson.
Hello. How peaceful you all look. Oh, I am pleased to be here. They were lovely damsons you sent, Sarah. I made jelly.
Will you have some flapjack, Mary?
Oh, Jane.
I'm surprised that you were able to get away.
Why? Oh, you mean the strike.
Well, of course the strike. We're worrying about it if you're not. And how's my brother standing up to it? That's what I want to know.
How on earth are you managing?
Are you getting the harvest in? Is it true that you and John are going to retire after this year, Mary?
Retire? Good heavens, no.
John has always been so sensitive since he was a boy to any adverse feelings.
All the worry must convince you that you must give up farming at Anderby.
I've walked into an ambush. Get out. I must get out. At this minute, John and I must go on farming at Anderby or our neighbour's ricks will not get built. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Hateful room, full of tongues that cut like glass.
I'll step outside with you, Mary.
No, Sarah, I really must run.
Come and get a few tomatoes before you go.
Yours are always the first ripe.
Mary, John will have to give up farming.
You just want him back here under your thumb. You've always been jealous, thought I didn't appreciate him properly.
Do you appreciate him properly?
What do you mean?
He gave up his own farm at Littledale to work like a servant for you at Anderby, paying off your and your father's debts.
Well, I had no debts. I can't do it.
I'm a cross old woman and not very happy. But I do have eyes in my head. It seems dull to you to come and live in Market Burton. But it is dull. But we all have to face it sooner or later.
I'm going to fight it out in Anderby. And I'll take care of John, too.
The rarest courage is in giving way graciously when it's too late to fight. I couldn't do it. But I want you to.
You're all in a conspiracy, because you're out of things and I'm in them. I know I sound rude, Sarah, but I've made up my mind. Now, what about those tomatoes you were going to give me?
Seated on a vegetable marrow, with barley tickling the back of his neck, Mr. Coast grinds his teeth and jabs with angry speed at the notes of the opening hymn of the harvest thanksgiving service.
Yes. It is gathered in. Every last wretched sheaf of it, thanks to that suffering rossiter coming down and stopping the strike.
In the mirror above the organ, he sees Mrs. Mary Robson singing erect and triumphant in the front pew. Glorying, no doubt, over his humiliation.
Almighty and most merciful Father, we
Mr.
have
Coast.
Erred...
Mr.
Quiet, boy.
There's a note for you from the vicar, sir.
We have give it here. Stop reading it.
Ow!
Of our own hearts. We have offended
Dear Coast,
against thy holy laws.
Would you kindly manage not to go so fast with the hymns? This is not a trial of strength. Outrageous impertinence. I'll have it your own way. At last, lumpen proletariat clumping home to Yorkshire pudding and beef. Head thumping again. Oh, where's the music? All over the floor.
Oh! Mr. Coast!
Well?
There was no need to caricature my criticism, Mr. Coast. That last hymn was quite spoilt. Not at all the spirit for you to adopt. Please play more suitably in future.
Oh, look at that. He's stopping by the front pew. Mary Robson's there. Must have heard me being scolded as if I were a child. Oh, too much.
Well, I think we may congratulate you, Mr. Robson. You stood out for the sake of the small farmers.
Well, it's over at least.
So no more talk of your retiring, I hope.
Whoever told you that?
I believe your husband said something at the parish meeting.
No, I'm sure you're mistaken. We both hate town life.
Still, even though the labourers were persuaded by Mr. Rossiter to climb down this...
I don't suppose we shall have any more bother.
Shut the door after us, will you, Mr. Coast? We're leaving now.
Yeah. So, there'll be no more bother, will there? Not for Mrs. Mary Robson, in a world laid out so conveniently by the Almighty entirely for her advantage. Damn the woman! Damn her!
Afternoon, Mr. Coast. Not taking a Saturday jaunt to Addrescliff like the rest of them, then.
Oh. It's you, Eli. How's the child, then?
There's not to do for the likes of me, but wait till she gets better.
Well, let me see. Where are you working now?
Huh? I've been out of work since that business with Mrs. Robson and Jack Greenwood.
Ah, she's a foolish woman. Very.
Hey, just know where Robson's foreman is. He's had a dungeon delivered today, so they can thresh all day Sunday.
I don't know and I don't care.
Oh, one of the famous strikers, eh?
I'll see to you. Now, back her in, if you can.
Of course I can. Here, what time's Fox up of?
You've got time. Back her up by stacks, then you come along with us and the missus for a bit of harvest celebration.
Hey, a big harvest. Hey, that's something to celebrate.
Good evening, Mr. Coast.
Oh, it's our Mr. Rossiter, is it? I'm surprised you'd show your face.
You won't understand, Coast. They had their strike. A great thing happened, and the men of Anderby will never be the same again.
What's so different for me, then? I'm still out of work.
You know, you're a romantic, Mr. Rossiter. It'll all be just the same. Patronage, complacency. And look at that farm, bulging with grain and pigs and cattle and horses. People like the Robsons are stronger than us.
Is Mrs. Robson in, do you know?
Oh, so that's why you're here, to hobnob with the enemy.
She's gone to Addrescliff, along half the village.
I'll be on my way, then. I hope your luck changes, Eli. Mm.
Easy for an unattached man to speak of luck. But when luck is a woman who's got a knife into you... Now, the wind is definitely increasing.
We'll have a blustery night.
And a dry month behind us. The Beck's reduced to no more than mud.
Bond's you in bottom.
It'd be a sad business for the Robsons if luck... If a spark from that traction engine fired their ricks.
No, it would.
Aye. All the farm buildings to windward of the stacks. There was a stack fire the other side of Market Burton on Wednesday. Oh. Either a spark or someone starting it. Possible to tell.
What are you driving at, Mr. Coles?
Oh, nothing, nothing. By the way, did you hear the rumour that if there's one more bit of trouble, then the Robsons leave the village? On account of his stroke.
No, I didn't.
Well, good evening.
Just hold the pony's head till we're out of the yard, hostler. Now then, John. Come on. Up you get.
It's going to be a rough ride.
Well, we'll be home well before the storm. All right, let her go now.
Night.
Good night.
Good night, ma'am.
I saw young Rossiter this morning.
Oh! Thought I was rid of him. Thought I exercised him when I fought the strikers. And now my hands tremble at the sound of his name. You saw him in Addrescliff, then?
In Anderby. In the street, this morning.
In the village? Is he staying, do you know?
Said he was off this evening.
Did he ask after me at all?
No, I don't think so. He seemed a bit flurried. Ashamed, I'd say. Though in the end, I reckon he did the gentlemanly thing. It was a long year. You picked him up first, wasn't it?
At this crossroads.
Have you got a cold coming on, honey?
No. Not too far now.
David being sick in the ditch. David in the parlour holding sheets for me to cut. David beside me in the field.
I couple of years and all this union and everything will be forgotten. I'll make Enderby the best village in the wolds. Our village, John.
Anything you say, honey. You know best.
John, a great, kind, ineffective old sack of potatoes that I must carry with me till he dies. While somewhere in the world, Quicksilver Coppernob David lives, burns in the battle I want him to win. But not here, not in this little monarchy. It's all I've got.
Who's burning edge clippings on a Saturday night, then?
They can't be. Look out! Shouldn't cycle without lights.
Is that you, Mrs. Robson? I'm fetching fire engine. Your stacks are going up.
That's bad. In this wind, none of it fresh.
Oh, come on, Starlight. Hold tight there, John. Come on!
She stops for no inquiry, but leans low and sends the pony forward at a gallop. Dark trees and hedges stream past. At the top of Church Hill, they see a glare of red, throwing the shape of roofs and chimneys into black relief. The cart descends the hill into Enderby, and at last Mary draws up outside the stackyard gate. Before her rise the flames from 24 stacks, merrily blazing.
Why you, Mrs. Robson?
Don't just stand there.
No, no, honey, no.
Are the bar tables safe?
I don't want that against them.
Oh, Mrs. Greenwood, take these keys.
Yeah.
Get someone to fetch jugs and pans from the house and make a line from the hospital stable. Jack, rub this pony up.
It's just doing it, ma'am.
Are the animals turned out?
They have to put wet sacks on their heads. Two men that kicked.
Dawson, don't slop the water. There's little enough of it. Was it a spark from the engine then?
The chef said it was, but Michael Flynn says it was lit a purpose. He ran out the yard shouting, now he's done it, now we'll get it.
I wish he'd stay to help. Where are they?
Oh, Mr. Rossiter went off to get the fire engine.
And Constable Burton?
He was here, only someone fetched him on the street.
These buckets were heavy.
Oh, Mrs. Robson, the constable says I'm to wash you. There's been someone here, and can they bring him in your house?
I'll come with you, Jack. Now, what happened?
Someone shot that fellow. What did over talking?
Oh, poor Mr. Hunt.
No, not him, ma'am. None of the way they're dead.
Don't speak like that.
Can we take him into the house, Mrs. Robson?
Yes.
I've done it, you see. Praise be to Mary, I've delivered you from the hand of the wicked man.
Mike, get out of the way. And go on into the house. And light a lamp, Jack, and fill the kettle.
Yes, Mrs. Robson.
Is he badly hurt?
Shot right through the head. He's dead, ma'am.
Oh, you'd better take him through the kitchen into the little gun room. There's a sofa there.
Come in here, plotting and agitating against yourself. Throwing his leg over his bicycle with the bricks blazing behind him. I know he'd done it. And I raised my gun to him. Oh, praise be, I did it, ma'am.
Go away. Go away!
You cut the ham, Mary, and I'll see to the bread. So whether it's for supper or breakfast...
Nothing for me, Sarah.
You must eat. Fred's outside, ma'am. He's been seeing to the horses that got burnt.
A bad business, Mary, but you've served the cottages, got the house still.
I've told Violet to make up the spare bed for you, Sarah.
Thank you.
It'll be your first night in Enderby.
Out come the proper words and proper behaviour. On the gunroom sofa, David's red hair still flames alive, though he lies still, his feet sticking up under my best bedspread. It's still there, the note in my pocket that I picked up from the hall mat.
I am sorry not to find you here. I wanted to apologise again for my recent behaviour. You know, too, that I still believe that Enderby is run on a pernicious system of patronage. It would be so splendid if you could realise that from this false good, true evil will certainly arise. You disable your villagers by doing your sort of caring for them.
Well, there's all the insurance to sort out. Just a few stewed apples, please. Yeah, I'll get on to the brokers in the morning.
No more tea at this time of night, thank you.
Eli Waite. And it should be Eli Waite.
The two of them saw him putting the paraffin on the straw, sir. They thought it was water till he put the match to it.
Mm. Go to bed, John. You're done up. And you, Violet.
Reckon you're right, don't it? I'll be off. Thank you all.
Good night, John.
Well, I'm going up too.
Fred, sorry you ever joined with those strikers. He's a good lad, really.
I know.
Yeah, get some shut-eye, Violet. There'll be clearing up enough to do in the morning.
Good night.
Good night, Mother. Violet.
Just the two of us left. Come to bed, Mary. You're doing no good sitting digging in the salt cellar at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I can't get things straight in my head.
You will. You'll have them all running about. Be rebuilding by the end of the week if I know you.
Ever since we drove up the hill and saw the fire, I've had the feeling that I've made it all happen. It and the strike and everything.
You're being sentimental, Mary.
I was wrong in the garden the other day. John must go to Market Burton to live now. In the morning, I'll tell Toby to put Anderby up for sale.
It's the right thing. Though hard for you.
Have you thought, without me here, Mr. Rossiter's ideas are going to take on like wildfire in this village? Have you thought of that, Sarah?
Get some rest. I'll lock the doors for you.
You go up, I'll do it.
You're doing right by John, Mary.
Alone downstairs, except for David in the gunroom, Mary opens the curtains on the sodden dawn. The storm has finished. Steam and smoke still rise from charred rafters. Mary smells the burnt straw and an autumn scent of mushrooms in wet grass. The sun shows gold through the mist over the hills.
Goodbye, Enderby. Give you to David now. No, not mine to give.
In Anderby Wold, Mary was played by Joanna Mackey and David by Joseph Peters. Derek Smith was John and Alison Fisk the narrator. Sarah and Mrs. Coast were played by Lorraine Peters, Tom and Mr. Coast by Nigel Anthony, and Janet and Miss Taylor by Rosalie Williams. Robert Keegan was Uncle Dick and Ezra Dawson, Eileen O'Brien, Ursula and Mrs. Greenwood, and Keith Clifford, Mike and Hunting. Violet was played by Jane Dowell and Eli Waite by Jack Carr. Jason Littler was Jack and Jenny Luckraft the child, and other parts were played by members of the cast. Anderby Wold was adapted by Gay Houston from the novel by Winifred Holtby and directed in Manchester by Caroline Smith.